woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, I'm up by Jackson Jacks. I'm telling you, just about one on the board. SP Futures down 10. NASDAQ Futures down 35. Dow Futures down 114. Interesting. Interesting day again yesterday with the President and I talking about unleashing oil from the oil reserves and all kinds of stuff. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
We do.
What does he know? What does he know about oil reserves?
What do I know everything about oil reserves.
Yeah, so.
Okay, I don't know everything about it. I do know that the big release from the strategic oil reserve is less than 3 days' worth of oil for the United States, and to the extent that it's going to stay in the United States, it's not that wouldn't do much, but I'm not even sure it's all going to stay in the United States. The whole theory behind it is that if we're just going to throw it onto the world oil market, and that will somehow lower the prices. But, again, it's just a drop in the bucket, so I don't see that doing much of anything. And, in fact, after the announcement, oil prices went up, did they not?
Yes. Now, you got to use the word strategic. Now, when you use words like that.
It was strategic. But part two of that is that the president went on to talk about how the oil-producing countries just aren't producing enough, and they should produce more. Seemingly oblivious to the notion that he is the president of an oil-producing country that is producing that is pumping 2 million barrels a day less than it used to.
There was this wacko guy when I first started trading. He was actually kind of a buddy of Dr. J's. He was a little out there, and was when people talked to him, they would mention something like he would never get the facts, let the facts get in the way of a good story.
I try not to.
And I think we're this, I've been, as everybody knows, one of the things that if I had real time to do, I would love to be an expert on the oil market. I find it absolutely fascinating. And I got this way. We used to go, I've told you guys about this before. We used to go to these money shows, way back in the day. And they were absolutely fascinating. This couple ran them. But they were big deals, in Vegas. You know, there'd be 15, 20,000 people there at least. And the CBOE was a big contributor, teaching people about options, and Alex Jacobson would speak, and Marty Kearney would speak, and Marty's been on the show. They were good people. Once in a while, they'd tap a market maker and ask me to go or something, and they would speak, and I'd help out or answer questions or something. But we always got, pretty good crowds, but they got...
Were you the shell? Were you planted in the crowd to ask the
question? Oh no! I would.
I got softball cheap.
The softball cheap. So no.
I've been known to put a shell in there, but not for necessarily a softball question. It's just somebody's got to break the ice, so I always try to line up somebody who, hey, if nobody asks a question, would you jump in here and get the ball rolling?
How many people, Maddie, under the age of 35, know the definition of the word shill?
100%.
Really? You think so?
Yes.
It's obviously not used in terms of like poker games and stuff. What's it used for? Just
someone for shilling products?
Being a shill?
Yeah. Or more of a marketing person then. Okay. All right. Not
well, someone that shills, when I think of a shill, I think of someone that is selling a product without being upfront about it.
Okay. So it's not the, it came from the gambling reference. When if you had a poker game in Vegas where you'd have, you know, three players there. They were house players making it look like you had a real game.
Sure, yeah.
Or on the L when you get the person doing the shell game. And somebody comes into the car and actually wins a few times,
right,
so that other people will try it. That's a shill.
Yep.
Yes, yes. where the hell was I going with this? But so you go and there were people selling. If you wanted to buy a vending machine to put on a tollway, I mean that was like an investment and stuff. It was absolutely fascinating the ways in America. That's why I get this incredible view of American, shall we say, intelligence and craft. There had to be 100 to 500 different ways to separate you from your cash in somewhat of an investment thing. There was a numismatic girl that hauled this huge safe in there, and which cost like a fortune, she told me. They got to haul it from the dock. I don't know what he used. But, you know, coins and, anyway, all kinds of stuff. And oil and gas guys were there. And not many people were all that interested, but whenever we'd go to the different breakout meetings, I had nobody to talk to, so I'd go talk to these guys. Not to mention a few of them had the best-looking assistants, shall we say. Not that I noticed. But it's absolutely a fascinating industry. There's oil wells. One guy had an oil well, and they give you all this stuff, right, because they don't want to take it home. I actually went home and read the stuff. One guy had an oil well in Alaska. Was originally owned by, I think, Standard Oil of Indiana or someplace, which became Amoco. It was on about its fifth. Finally, they got a road close enough to the place where they started drilling, and it was a big success. But they originally bought the thing in like 1957, and didn't drill on it to 1978 or something because they had no way to get the oil out of there. I mean, there's places where you can go, and it's a new area where if you win, you're like rich. But your chances of winning are, you know, 1 in 5. And then there's areas where there's a bazillion gas wells, and you know if you drill one there, you got like a 90% chance of striking gas, and it's probably going to be this much, and you're going to sell it to this utility for this much, and it's going to give you an 8% return. I mean, the industry is so multifaceted. Then there's people that are in the pipeline area. There's people in the trucking area. It's obviously, as time goes by, people look at it as a dirty industry and so forth, but the fact is, It is fascinating. And, just in terms of all the different players, what they all do. Anyway, so I went off on a tangent, but as time went by and they started doing a strategic well, when this thing first started, way back, because of my curiosity, I would read up on some of this stuff. It was a long time ago. And they were just buying oil like from anywhere and winging it in these, what do they put them in, caves or salt caverns or something, or, I mean, depending on, there's like three or four major spots where they have it, right, Kevin? Something like that. And you put it in there, and the idea that you could all of a sudden one day tap this stuff without regard to kind of what grade it was or whatever, get it to a pipeline, to a refinery that is set up just for that grade or something like that. The idea that this would actually be strategic if you needed it never even entered the picture. It was more, you know, oil price is cheap. Originally, they were buying it when it was expensive, and then selling it was cheap. But oil price is cheap. Let's help the oil companies out by buying oil, essentially surplus oil. I mean, the idea that you're gonna change the market with this stuff, you know, is. But Maddie and I were talking on the way, and the idea that
first of all, it's there for, you know, a time of war or something like that when everything gets disrupted. But if you really had a situation where, you know, we weren't able to fill up at the gas stations, you know, if we couldn't refine enough, we couldn't get enough to the refineries to be able to deliver it to end users, then maybe releasing gasoline or releasing oil from the strategic reserve would make sense. But this is nothing. This is just a symbolic move.
Well, but also,
I don't like to see people patting themselves on the back for making symbolic moves.
Well, when you look at the administration, clearly, and you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb as to whether it's right or wrong or in a barrel. The idea of how much in the future, you know, we need to get more on renewable energies. I don't think there's anybody around. I don't think there is. It says as time goes by, the more you can replace a coal plant when it's time, assuming you've put all the money in the coal plant you needed to make it as minimally pollution as possible, when it's time to get rid of that thing. If you can figure out a way to do a natural gas plant, or better yet, a windmill someplace, or some kind of geothermal, or whatever it happens to be, wouldn't we all be better off? Yeah. But I don't think there's anybody. I mean, when I drove across northern Arizona, when it was, you know, 110 degrees and windy as hell, the idea that we're pulling a Santa Fe train with diesel locomotives is like, what are we doing? If there's a place on Earth,
the logic behind where we are is that we need to replace oil and gas as primary fuels, and it's the logic that would have you saying, I need to replace a computer system. I'm going to do that. I'll go out in the world and shop for a new one and put in the replacement. And while I'm doing all of that, I'm going to shut down the one that we have.
Right.
You keep running the one that you have until you have the alternative in place. And it, I don't know.
If you follow the money, Kevin, which I think I'm, probably one of my, obviously, people don't agree with anybody, my views on people walking around with guns, so I'll leave that one alone today, but
probably a good idea.
Yeah, I mean,
because I won't let you go of it.
But
I don't think walking around with guns is a good idea either. That doesn't change the, what happened in Kenosha. The verdict was the correct verdict.
I would agree with that as well. I just don't want any more people like this going to a gathering with a gun. Well, or the two guys he shot, whatever. But let's lay off that one. I'm saying, when you start to, let's put it this way, wean people over the next 20 years off more fossil fuels. Let's assume that this is the right thing to do. Who knows if it is or it isn't, but seems to me with China and the other guys just doing the stuff that they're doing, I don't know how much of a dent we're making, but that's another story. But if you're going to do it, the way to do it is to essentially gradually raise prices. Unless you want to come out and say you can't own a pickup truck or something, which I don't think we're going to do here, if anybody wants to be elected, though you gradually raise prices. So when gas is $2 a gallon, people don't worry all that much about. But even though you can't buy a vehicle now that doesn't get better gas mileage than it did 20 years ago. So every time somebody gets a new car, you're gaining on it anyway, a little bit. So that's some progress. But if you want to force people into your mode, you want to get the price of gasoline going up, up, up. Now, you can do it one of two ways. You can either slyly cut production or permits or things like these guys are doing, or you can just put a tax on it and say, okay, we'll fix it. Not only if you put a tax on it, you not only increase the price of oil, but you decrease the profit of the oil company because they're going to eat a little bit of the tax. I mean, if I had a blackboard and everybody's sitting in a room, I could show you how that works.
I would wholeheartedly disagree with you that that's the approach to take.
I didn't say that's the. I didn't say. I'm saying this is how you would do it. I'm not endorsing it. I'm saying.
Well, take out the U because it ain't how I would do it.
No, my point is, it's the economic way to change it. The idea would be, as your other stuff gets more and more competitive, if you really have a hard-on for gasoline, you put a 25-cent tax on it. This is not my policy.
I understand, but I agree with the first part of what you said, Tom. What you do is you make the alternative energies more economical.
And that will
happen over time because I know it will because Jennifer Granholm also already told us this week that it's all free. All those energy sources are free because the wind exists and we don't. It's not like we have to manufacture it, and the sun is free. We don't have to manufacture it, which may be one of the dumbest things I have ever heard a cabinet secretary say.
You want to
drive the oil's free too, by that logic, but you still have to put process in place to make it usable.
I understand, but where I'm going with this is I talk all the time about the individual economic choices people make. and in this country, and that's why I don't, either side of the aisle, I'm convinced that every single person in Congress, maybe not every, needs an economics 101 class. They don't seem to have any respect for the amount of decisions that people make every single day regarding economics and regarding marketing.
I agree with you. How many of them have economics degrees? Like our most, I don't know if I want to say most famous, our loudest Congresswoman, AOC, has an economics degree.
From where?
You wouldn't know it, though.
No, you wouldn't know it. But what I'm saying is, what you want is somebody to walk into the dealership that actually needs a pickup truck, okay, and say, okay, I can either get this one over here with the fire-breathing Hemi 8, or I can get this one over here for a six-cylinder. It's still a pickup truck. And over the life of the truck, I'm going to save, you know, whatever. I'm going to get 20 miles at a gallon instead of 16. You want to drive that decision down to where those individual people are looking forward and saying, over the next 15 years that I own this truck, it's a more intelligent decision for me to buy the one that makes 20 miles, gets 20 miles a gallon, the one that buys 15 or makes 15. That's what you do. You can't.
That's where you want to be. Yeah,
that's where you want to be. And you can do that by raising. What you don't do is cause everything in the world to raise the prices, then say you're going to be the president of lowering prices and pull stuff out of the reserve. It's hard to do both conversations, Kevin. Like in the same week. Are we really that stupid? I mean,
especially if you're not very adept at speaking and presenting your case in the first place.
Well, it's not like every president going back hasn't done the same thing. They try something and then they're appalled by the. I mean, I go back to, you know, I was arguing with some right wingers on Sunday about the two step people do on the taxation. I mean, Reagan went out and had a huge tax cut, and 2 years later they were appalled at what the government deficit looked like, and they ran out with a tax increase. Which is the same. Now these guys, they come out there with all this money, they pour out in the system, now they're appalled by the inflation. Oh my God, how'd that happen? Well, you just did it. Duh. I mean, Trump's, you know, Trump put through the tax decrease. Now he didn't expect COVID to happen, but he put the shingle out. Don't worry, I'm going to lower taxes and we'll end up with more money. Everybody buys that crap, Kevin. I don't know why. But here, crap for sale. And sure enough, now we have his huge tax decrease. You got corporations paying less and less and less, and the government is now foreign. And I'm not saying that I'm just saying there is a response to everything you do. Now here you are a year later, and the taxation, whatever it is, and everybody knows that I don't want my taxes going up, and I think I can find a way where, you know, we could even do it better, but nobody wants to listen. But the point being is, now we are now financing roughly 60% of what the government's spending through taxation. That dog doesn't hunt, Kevin. It just doesn't. I'm sorry. I mean, 60%. We're not talking about
sustainable.
Yeah, we're not talking about being kind of close. We're not even close to close. And all the push is to do even more. And then he comes out, not him, but him and Powell and what's her name, Brainerd. They come out and they talk about, now this has all been in the works for at least a month, right?
Every time I hear Brainerd, I'm going to think of. Brainerd in the movie Fargo. I'm just going to think of Marge Gunderson going Brainerd.
Well, you're doing better than me because I think
the town in Minnesota.
Well, it's a stop. Yeah. It's a neighborhood in Chicago. It's a stop on the Rock Island. I've stopped at about a thousand times. So everybody says Brainerd. I think I'm at 89th in Ashland. but yesterday they finally came out with the money supply numbers for the last month. Guess what? We're on a 12.5% annual pace. Well. Now you're going to fight.
Doesn't that line up approximately with the rate of inflation over the last month?
The rate of inflation over a period of time is almost exactly
10.8. But it's like 10.8 if you multiply by 12 on the last last inflation announcement.
And your inflation over time, unless you really gun the stuff into the market where you actually do lower the velocity like they did a couple of years ago, is going to be. The money supply growth minus the real growth is going to be an inflation rate. So what's 12.5 minus 2? 10. Duh. I mean, but now, you know, but Jeff was talking yesterday about the new monetarists. You don't pay attention to that. Okay, well, I'm not paying attention to it, but there it is. So now all of a sudden, we're going to become the lower the gas price inflation president. None of these guys, I mean...
They want to open it. Don't forget, Tom, they're going to do investigations into price gouging.
Yeah.
No, that's a nice claim to march out into the news cycle, but it would be nice if he marched it out with a little evidence of, you know, in the legal sense, what price gouging is. Because at the moment, it's just a wild accusation without any basis.
I'll put the oil industry with all their incredible warts, and me driving the Suburban with the 42-gallon tank, I will put the oil industry competitive-wise against the pharmaceutical industries any day of the week.
Any day of the week, I'd agree with that.
Any day of the week.
I'll go even further. You know, if your idea of price gouging is, hey, my costs went up and I ain't eating it because I don't have to. You know, that is an industry that is able to, for the most part, at least up to a very high price, is able to pass along its cost increases to its customers.
Why?
You know, some can, some can't. That's one that can.
Why do people generally think, Kevin, again, this is a lack of economic education, think that on a day like today or a day like tomorrow, that the pricing decision, especially any kind of competitive industry, where you can price something, doesn't necessarily match up with your product prices, and they're two totally separate decisions. What I can get for gasoline on the corner right now, if I bought the gas 4 years ago, and I paid $1.50 for it, or $1.85 or whatever it was, all of a sudden I reopen my gas station and I look at the prices out there. Looks to me like they're $3.54. Do I have an obligation to put it out there at $2? I sure as hell do not. And if I buy it this week at $3.50 a gallon and next week it drops precipitously down to $3, is there a law that says somebody's got to pay $3.50 for me when everybody else is $3? No. I mean, people can learn way more about economics by looking at gas station pricing than they sure can by any other industry that I can see, right?
You know, that's an interesting observation. I really hadn't thought of it that way, but I think, you know, at least at first blush, you're right.
Do you think there's any connection whatsoever?
I hate to say that.
I know. You hate to say that. Just do you think there's any connection whatsoever between what they used to charge for Viagra and how much it cost them to make a pill?
No. The price of Viagra is totally tied to let me put it this way. The demand for those who need it is probably really, really high. willing to pay a pretty darn good price.
And the problem was you had one company. You had a patent. Right?
Now,
it was 19 years. It's a long time, especially when the patent law is 17. Lipitor, same way. What do you think? Do you think there's any connection between how much they charge for Lipitor and how much it costs for a pill?
You know, I take generic Lipitor. Do you know what it costs me every month?
It's more than it used to, I bet.
No, zero.
How is that? Are you stealing it?
Meyer Pharmacy sells its Lipitor for zero because they know people who need Lipitor are probably going to need other drugs too.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin, because I only have one significant other. A couple of things, nothing dramatic. She does great. But she had a couple of these generic things when Walmart went with the $5 generics. Every one of them is up to like $60 now. Our buddy John Dyer, who's been on
the show, because producers bought up all the generic companies.
Right. So our buddy John Dyer,
and we let them do it because the Obama, you know, without them doing that, it was to keep the Obamacare exchanges alive.
Well, we let all the insurance companies combine too. We let all the insurance companies combine too.
We let all the insurance companies buy into pharmaceuticals too.
One night, our buddy John Dyer, he's been on the show with us. Guy knows more about pharmaceutical industry. I think he was on, I don't know, I'm speaking out of turn here a little bit, but I think he might have been on the OSCO board at age 28 or something. I mean, knows his stuff. And tell you what, I said, John, I tell you what, I had somebody coming on tomorrow talking about the oil, or we should get him back on because he's back in town. the I just want I'll buy. Let's go up to Tripoli and just sit down for an hour or two and talk to me about the industry. God's sake, Kevin, it's a Wild West. Absolute Wild West. Kickbacks here, kickbacks there. These pharmacy benefit managers, how they get money from the big pharmaceuticals when Walgreens doesn't, and these people get in the middle, and I mean, the money's flying all over the place. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, this is what happened. This is years ago. He's telling me that's why you don't see any small pharmacies, is because the big drugs, like the Lipitor, like the Viagra, the pharmacies don't make any money on it because the profit margin is very thin. If it's a $150 prescription for Lipitor, where the hell it used to be, I never was on it, thank God. And, you know, the pharmacy might be actually paying $130 for that, or $135. But now a generic might be $20 and a pharmacy's paying $2. So there's a dramatic difference. I mean, they're making way more. Plus, they don't have to float if the state's not paying them for maybe a year on the other stuff. So if it's a Medicaid, the pharmacy has to pony up $130.
Right, their cash flow is just killed.
It's absolutely buried by the big stuff. So because that's why all these small guys are out of business. I mean, because the state's going to pay them once a year, so they could have them $1 million. And plus, banks are not going to help them out like they are at CVS in the current state of the Fed. And this goes back Democrat, Republican, whatever. I mean, the idea, you know, the thing. My big, I'll use the term hard on for Powell and for what's her name. You don't lower interest rates down to zero and not make sure that everybody comes with you. I mean, 2-3 years ago, I mean, I was challenged on the show. I went back, and since 2008, interest rates went from like what three or four to federal funds rate to zero, and the long term rates went from whatever 7 or 8 down to 2, and I had credit card rates going up. I mean, you should have a responsibility if your policy is to lower interest rates, to make sure they go down for everybody, not just your buddies. Just saying, you know. So there's reasons why I don't like these people. But the thing is, with me, it's non-denominational because I see both sides doing it. I don't really see. It's not like Trump came in or Biden came in and told the Federal Reserve, "Hey, look, if these credit card rates aren't down to 10% in 6 months, you're out of there." And neither one of them have said that, have they?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
And you know, I think enough of our politicians are just stupid and they don't know what's going on, or that, you know, they kind of,
hey, how about let's talk about
without asking a lot of questions or thinking it through.
Kevin, let's talk about that after the break.
Whereas I think the people in the industry know damn well what they're doing.
Let's talk about that after the break. Let's figure out, let's go through what it would be like to be one of those, because I was a mini politician at the CBOE at one time. I didn't get anywhere. SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 64. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. You've spent Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. We've got Gap stores leading down 16% this morning. They're blaming everything on supply chain. I don't know if that's necessarily where you want to put it, but they claim there's issues all over the place. So it's a big time realtor. They obviously they own Abercrombie and Fitch, they own Victoria's Secret, they own Old Navy. What else do they own, Matty? They got Gap.
Those are the main ones.
Those are the main ones. Is Abercrombie and Fitch still a real player? I mean, they used to be.
They're still around, and I think they're considered a player. I don't shop there, but.
But when they first opened at South Street Seaport in New York, way, way back, they had a Gap, Abercrombie & Fitch store there. They had some of the best duds ever. I mean, before they got bought by anybody. Anyway, just old history. S&P futures down 15, NASDAQ futures down 62, Dow futures down 142. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 103.
I think they own Banana Republic, too. That's one you missed.
Well, they buried Banana Republic.
Yeah, they still own them.
Did you ever shop there? Were you ever young enough to shop there?
I've shopped there, yeah.
Before they were taken over?
I've shopped there before they were taken over, and then I've shopped there once after they were taken over, and it's night and day.
I mean, they had the best stuff, didn't they? I mean, their stuff lasted forever. I mean, they were really an outfitter kind of a place. Anyway, FTSE up 8, call that flat, CAC around down 14. It's 0.2%, so not much going on in Europe at all. In Asia, Nikkei down 471, 1.6%. That's a number. Shanghai, however, up 3 points. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 33.1%. Now, they were down 1.5% yesterday. These guys are kind of on different days over in Europe. We're seeing this every day now. It's kind of weird. Yesterday, the Dow ended up 194, S&P up 7, NASDAQ down 79. We're down way more than that. Came flying back on the close. So it ended up being, like I say, a mixed day with the Dow being up. Bonds unchanged at 1.66. The Bund unchanged, minus 0.23. Japan up 0.007 to positive 0.08. Highest we've seen there in a little bit. We've got oil up a whole 3 cents, 78.53. Meanwhile, as the president's doing this, oil's dropped like 10 bucks in the last week. I don't know these guys watch the market or what they do, but Brent down 13 cents, 82.18. Natural gas at 4.95, under 5 bucks. Leading into winter, it's a dollar cheaper than it was 6 weeks ago. I don't know what the logic is there. I've never seen that before. Arbob down a penny at 231. We've got gold up 220 to 1786, way below the 1850 it made earlier in the week. Silver up 2 cents, 23.45. Copper up 2 cents, 4.44. Continue to have dollar strength as the other currencies are dropping even further than ours. Kind of bizarre. We got crypto down $1,000, 56,581. Again, about $6,000, 7,000 more than the high earlier in the week of 63,000. Matty, we have for us Traffic Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues down to the south and southwest. There's a crash on the Bishop Ford inbound side at 159th Street. That's has traffic backed up to the Tri-State Tollway. Solid traffic. Expect delays of up to 30 minutes in that area due to that crash, which apparently is close to being cleared, but still some resulting congestion. Multiple vehicles involved, and that has the Bishop Ford backed up all the way down to the Tri-State and down near I-80 even. It's that far backed up, so give yourself plenty of time there. And then on the Tri-State itself, there's road work that has the three left lanes closed on the northbound side at 95th Street. So that's creating stop-and-go traffic and major delays as only one lane is getting by on the Tri-State northbound side there at 95th.
So maybe those guys are working from home.
No issues on the Dan Ryan or I-57 at this hour. Eisenhower's nice and quiet as well. Day before Thanksgiving, light traffic out there. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on Lakeshore Drive. So we're looking good, except for those two trouble spots down south. Weather today, some sunshine early, and then we'll have overcast skies this afternoon. But it does warm up a bit. We'll reach a high of 51, which is right around normal after we had a bunch of cold weather days in a row. Right now, it is mostly clear and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 73 today. Right now, it's clear and 62. In sports, the Blackhawks were in Calgary last night, and they were blown out by the Flames 5-2. Coyotes were off. The Bulls were off as well. They're back in action tonight down in Houston. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Suns were off last night. They're in Cleveland tonight. That'll tip off at 5 p.m. Arizona time. College football, Northern Illinois blew an early lead and lost big to Western Michigan 42-21 last night. College hoops, Illinois, Northwestern, and Notre Dame all bounced back with wins. Illinois beat Bruce Weber, their former coach, in Kansas State 72-64. Northwestern had no problem with Georgia 78-62. And Notre Dame blew out Chaminade 90-64. Chief.
There used to be a, I don't know if anybody was a Star Trek Next Generation fan, but I was for quite a while. And one of the Daffy, well, the Daffy mother of Counselor Troy, she was pretty Daffy, but that was
Gene Roddenberry's wife, yeah.
Yeah. But she would come in and she was always teaching the one kid, remember that the greater equals the lesser and the lesser equals the greater. The kid could never figure out what the hell she's talking about. I mean, it is stunning to me that we're talking about issues in Washington, big issues that affect every American, your pocketbook, your education, you name it. I mean, these are big issues. They're not schlump issues. And here we have the Tri-State Toll Road that was supposed to not have any tolls in when, 1960-something, Kevin? Tolls have enough to go up every friggin' year. Then we got people, we used to take cash, but we don't take cash anymore. Now, I'm going to say those people have not been fired. They're probably working from home. How does a toll collector work from home exactly? So now we have this morning.
What's the transponder in the envelope? Mails it to the,
evidently,
to the driver.
So now we have, well, of course, we just built all those cash stations, right? So somebody got that contract. So now we have nothing going on. Now, here this morning, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, the last time I checked, I'm going to say that thousands of people from the southwest suburbs are now going to get on the tollway, pay an exorbitant toll, and go to the airport this morning, go home and visit grandma. And some idiot till now does not pick up road work that was supposed to have been picked up 2.5 hours ago. And the guy this morning before I picked you up, Matt, he said you will not go over 10 miles an hour from the Indiana border to the end of the road work at 95th Street. How the hell do you feel this morning? Is now everybody's going to miss their plane? I mean, and is anybody going to get fired for
that's
this?
That's okay. They're all going to be delayed anyway.
I mean, is anybody, yeah, is anybody going to get fired? This, I mean, you talk about, you know, messing up in Washington. Is at every single level there is no accountability anywhere to any of these people? I don't. It's astounding, Kevin. I mean, it is astounding.
I work for the government now. I get it. You know, there's some things we do really well, but man, there are some things that are classic like that.
But I mean, and no head will roll.
I won't get into bitching about them over the airwaves. But if you ever want to hear some stories, I can tell them.
But I'll start this out. Cliff Notes version of my own experience in politics, and when my politics was a board at the CBOE. You know, I did the election. In my mind, I was on the I was on a track for being on the board. Okay, which meant, you know, you get on a committee early on, maybe you prove that you're somebody that at least one night a week, you know, the door doesn't hit you in the ass at 3:15 when the floor closed. So you're willing to stick around and help out. Then if time went by, maybe you get on a second committee, and then somebody notices you become a vice chairman and then a chairman of a committee. And there's essentially a road to the board, right, Kevin? I mean, it's not like you have to do that or anything, but it's, you know, it's like being a football coach. You're an assistant here.
You gotta pay your dues.
You pay your dues. So you work your way up, and all of a sudden, there were a couple of us that, me more than the other guy, had this track record, but they were very aware that I was for an open outcry market. Not so much open outcry, like I didn't think that, you know, the electronic orders couldn't be delivered or anything, but I wanted a lot of market makers. I wanted a competitive marketplace, totally different than what you see now. So they knew that was my policy, so they just couldn't nominate me. Okay, so two of us decided we're running against the place. So we ran against the ticket. Nobody'd ever won before, and we were in a landslide. So there I am, me and this other guy, 2 of 12. And, well, actually, 2 of, like, 16 on the board. And it's an interesting, I don't know, Kevin, this is a pimple on the aspen elephant compared to the U.S. government. You didn't know what was on the agenda till the last minute. You looked around, and you felt there was another person in the room, and you just couldn't see him. And there was a guy, Larry Bloom, who helped me with my candidacy. Nice guy. And Larry had been, he was probably the head of the committee that built the building and did a beautiful job. Real nice guy. And owned a clearing firm. And he goes, I'll help you out, but you got to tell me one thing, because he goes, you're politically more adept than I am. I don't think he was right about that. When you find out who's really running the place, you've got to tell me. He goes, I've been on the board, I've been chairman of committees, I can't figure out where all these decisions are coming from to this day, and I've been here since day one. And he almost felt like there was a secret elevator up to the seventh floor to the chairman's office. There'd be stuff that land on the late breaking. Okay, let's get the staff out of the room, and they'll come up with an executive session topic. And you'd say, where did that come from? And then you'd ask people on the staff who I was pretty friendly with, by the way, was that you right there? No, I don't know where that one came from either. I got to believe, Kevin, that if you and I ran as the two-headed idiots from two districts in Illinois or Indiana or Michigan or someplace next to each other, and we won, and we go out to Washington, and they give us our little office and plunk our moldy butts on the end of the bench on the agricultural committee or some crap, we're going to be there 2 years. Not that that's a crap committee. They do a lot of good work. At the end of 2 years, we're going to sit around and go, what are we doing? Stuff is flying by us like it's the Ohio River, and we're sitting on the shore, and we're Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer fishing. I got to believe, Kevin, that there's no correlation between the average person out there who's in Congress and all this crap that's happening. And I don't know how to change it. I couldn't figure it out at the SIBO. All I know is I spent 6 years there and beat my head against the wall, did everything I possibly could, and stopped two or three egregious things from happening. All it meant that 15 of them went right by me because I couldn't touch them. But I was a totally useless loss for my 6 years, as hard as I tried.
There was a puppet master somewhere, and you just never...
And I could never get my hands around him. I could never put my hands around his neck, because I would have.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, Matt, we do have the name for today's show, Two-Headed Idiot, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't mean we criticize... As much as you like to criticize Elizabeth Warren, what does she do? She has no power. I think her histrionics comes from her frustration, and I'm not an Elizabeth Warren fan at all. I mean, she sees a guy who's a chairman of the Fed, who's got two or three people on there that are trading essentially ahead of the market on their own news, and the guy's just retired. Nobody goes to jail. The head doesn't roll. He gets reappointed. I mean, I feel for her a little bit, don't you?
Well, I suspect that at one time she did know where the power was, because what was it, the consumer, what was the name of the commission?
It's still there.
It was created during the Obama, yeah, but it was created during the Obama administration. She was, you know, that was her baby.
That shut her up.
So
Fred,
somewhere
her
along
up,
the line, she was tapped into things. But it was the things of that administration, not necessarily the current one.
Well, I mean, if you and I spend our entire career saying that Matty Weber's construction firm, that Matty should go to jail because he cheated on the last project, and at the end of the day, he gets the next project, how are you and I going to feel? I mean, right?
We're going to be looking at that and saying, my days are numbered.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out who are the puppet masters here. I mean,
either that or you learn to just shut up and go along to get along. If you want to have a long career in Congress, you know, that's just what you do. And that's only gotten worse. You know, how far back do you have to go before to find a day before the parties voted in lockstep? I mean, they don't 100% of the time. There's always some people who renegade, and we have that with Manchin and Sinema now. But by and large, each caucus votes its own way, and that's been that way for a long time. In 10 years, 15 years, I don't know how far back it goes before you actually had people who could influence policy, whether they were in the majority or not.
Well, the weird part, though, Kevin, is as much as people, and some of that, I wonder how much of this is for show. As much as the, let me discuss this with my, some of Audrey's right-wing friends all the time, is you think these bills are all positive or negative. Take this bill that's coming through, or the one that just got passed, the infrastructure bill. Now, I think it pretty much went on party line, right? There was a few, actually, no. The infrastructure one had
no. No, it didn't. It was negotiated. They had a committee, but it sort of did when you consider the Republicans who voted for it, because they're Republicans who tend to in prior roles in their career tended to be very much like Democrats.
Well, and whatever that means.
You know, everybody who voted for them knows that, so it's not. You know, it's not. I'm not criticizing it. Actually, I do like independent thinkers. I just think sometimes they're misguided. Sometimes they want to go along to get along too.
But the part I was having difficulty imparting to my combatants, shall we say, don't think for a second, because none of the Republicans are going to vote, say, for this new bill, that there isn't a whole bunch of crap in there for their districts. They're all in these committees, and they all horse trade on this stuff. So don't think for a second that no congressional district that has a Republican name on it is going to get a slice of it's not going to get a piece of the roadway. That it's going to end at his district and all of a sudden be gravel versus the best concrete. I mean, they're all in this together on the money. Just like they're all in it together on the lobbying money. I mean, you think they're all against each other, but they're really not. And I'm going to say that a lot of the Republicans are going to take home just as big of a piece of the pie to their district as the Democrats. So,
well, and I would argue, I would not argue with that. I would instead throw out the idea that for the most part, there isn't much difference between the parties. There are on some social issues, absolutely, there's big difference, but when it comes, let me put it this way. Let's just take an easy one. Take defense. I think there are different philosophies on the role of the military in the world between the parties. But when it comes to spending on the military, there's not much difference at all.
I want it in my district, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, but there's people that will tell you right now.
And let me rephrase that. When it comes to wasteful spending on the military, there's not much difference at all.
Well, you know, the difference between some of the planes that were built early on, it's not like people are dumber now, they're not. The difference was that you could have a plane that was built in, you know, wherever Northrop Grumman had a place or something. Now, the F-35 has parts made in what, 40, 30 states or some massive number, everybody's got a little piece of the thing? It's a, you know, my point is that there's Republicans that think that because all the Republicans voted no on the bill, that no Republican got a dime out of there. Hey, don't think that for a second. I wouldn't. Right? I mean, it's like saying that.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. I'd love to see it. Now that you mention it, I'd love to just take a pass through the bill and see what I see.
I think it would help if you're a more powerful person on a committee and maybe do your homework more and show up more. I'm gonna bet your district, Republican or Democrat, ends up with more. I'm going to say that.
You know my rule on that. My rule on it is that before they're allowed to vote, they need to certify that they've read the bill.
Well, that's. I was talking to my acquaintance Mayor Daley one day in the. We were in the club. We actually were in the sauna. We worked out, and he was always very talkative and real nice guy. I mean, I'd say, Mayor, if you send somebody to Congress, If somebody went to Congress, how do you know where you did a good job your first 2 years? And what did he say? He said, you need to bring back at least a $100,000 project for your district. He goes, it's a lot of politics, and he goes, it's a lot of, you know, policy, and you go there with an idea that you want government in such a way. He says, but there's also a boatload of money out there, and if you can't get your share for your district, you're not doing a good job, because other people are more than willing to take your share. It was a very interesting discussion from a guy who knows something. And I've never forgotten it. I mean,
whereas what we really like to think is, if you can't go in there and make sure that money is spent wisely, you're not doing your job. But Lord knows that ain't the game.
Well, but how many districts are there that there isn't some project that really needs to be done? There's got to be a railroad station someplace that needs renewal. There's got to be something. I mean,
everybody's got projects.
Yeah, everybody.
So I tell my advisory board when I want students to, to get internships and work, work related learning. And I said, you can't tell me you don't have a project that you could use somebody to do that's just been sitting there forever waiting for the arms and legs to do it.
Well, who was the guy?
Every business has those.
Well, who's the dude that?
And every district has those.
Yeah, who was the guy? Croaked not too long ago. He was in there forever. Was it Bird from West Virginia?
Could have been.
I went on this trip down the Illinois River. I didn't go too far down the river, but it was a barge trip, and it was guys that were. Anyway, I'll tell you what, Kevin, that was neat because I had never been. My only time through a lock was the one here, and going through Chicago River. And it's 2 feet on a bad day. Well, this one was like a couple hundred feet. You're at the bottom of this thing going, what if this thing doesn't float? They start pouring water into the thing. You're going up, a couple hundred feet. It's a whole different feeling. Anyway, they were talking about every lock in the Ohio. All these things were built during the Depression. Every lock and dam in the Ohio River has been replaced in the last 35 years or something. We've had one. And they said the guy from West Virginia got basically all that dough. And he was... Now, whether he was able to change world hunger, whether he was able to change military policy or economic policy, I don't know. But he brought home the bacon for the Ohio River. And our guys haven't. So, at the end of the day, did our guys help world hunger more than he did? I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Whatever esoteric crap they were going for, at least he's got something to show for it. And there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, it's the Chicago way, right?
Well, it is, and to a great extent, there's a productive aspect to it in Congress. It's just when you're bringing home now spending and projects that don't need to be done.
Well,
plenty of those too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And that's the crap we can't afford.
No, it's a lot of social programs that actually over a period of time do damage. But a lot of the stuff that we've done with I'll be nice and say with the absolute best intentions, have done more to break families apart than put them together.
I think you're right.
And I think it's been obvious since the 50s. There were a group of guys talking about...
And yet, who wants to say we're going to kill a benefit for poor people? Who would want to... you would never want to do that even though in the long haul you're not helping. I think this is one where... Reagan had it right, where he famously said the best thing you can do for poor people isn't to give them money, it's give them a job.
Well, that would be the truth. There was a group of guys, this is your kind of workout, Kevin. I used to play handball with a couple guys at Evergreen Path of Tennis 2 days a week at 6:30, right? So we'd play handball and get dressed. You didn't have to be to work at 8:30 in those days, so off we'd go. But there was a group of guys, the Mayor Vacco was one of them, and he had a bunch of 5-6 guys. They allegedly were telling the wives they were going to work out in the morning, right? Well, they'd show up in their tennis outfits. They'd never leave the table. They had about 8 cups of coffee. Somebody always brought donuts. And they sat there and BS for 2 hours, took a shower, and went to work, right? So that was their workout. I don't even think they went by the sauna. They didn't even give it that much. But one guy was there, and he was one of these urban planner kind of guys. And one day, I don't know what happened, the lights were out in the handball courts or something, so we couldn't play. And sitting there having coffee with these guys, and the dude is telling me, somehow they were on the subject of like Robert Taylor Homes, what do they call those things? High-rise, what was the name for them? Cabrini-Green. projects. And he said, you know, the interesting part about Chicago, he goes, these were tried in New York, somewhere, Bedford Stuyvesant, some damn place. He goes, they were tried in the, right after the war, where you put essentially poor people in stacked buildings, and within 7 or 8 years, everybody, sociologists, people who work for the cities, said this is like a really horrible idea. It's one thing to have, people in a high rise on Michigan Avenue where they bought the unit themselves. It's quite another to just stick so many people where, you know, 7 or 8 people in an apartment and people are playing, you know, God knows what in the hallway. It just doesn't work.
Clustering poverty is a really good way to make sure that it persists.
Yeah, he says it was just absolutely the wrong thing to do. He said it wasn't until like 2 years later that Cabrini Green and the Robert Taylor homes, the ground was broken in Chicago after everybody knew they were a failure. You know, you hear this stuff, I remember this kind of stuff, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. He goes, no, everybody knew they were a failure before we even put spade one on the ground here. And sure enough, they're a failure. I mean, but everybody knew it.
Big surprise, huh?
Yeah, big surprise. And anyway, what's with the, we've got Cincinnati is now 4. Where are the Irish on this list? I just heard the top 4.
There's 6 at the moment. There's 6, but...
Who's 5?
Michigan will probably lose to Ohio State. Although, it's kind of interesting. Ohio State's like an 8 or 8.5 point favorite in Ann Arbor. That seems a little rich. And it seems every time you get a big game where somebody has a disproportionate favor, it seems like they lose outright. So, you know, who knows? But for Notre Dame's purposes, I think they need the obvious choices to remain the obvious choices, and that's Georgia and Ohio State, for them to make the playoffs. And Cincinnati's in there at number 4 now, and Cincinnati beat them head to head in South Bend, so I don't see them passing Cincinnati unless Cincinnati loses, and Cincinnati losing is not out of the question. They have to play a conference championship game against Houston, who they didn't see in the regular season. Houston's only got one loss and has a pretty good team, so that, you know, that could fall for them. So, you know, Michigan loses, Houston loses, then they're going to have to sort out the Big 12. The Big 12 has Oklahoma and Oklahoma State playing today, this weekend. Both have one loss, so one of those will fall by the wayside. The winner of that game is going to have to go play the Big 12 championship, which could be a rematch between those two, and so they could, you know, just take each other out, or it could be against Baylor, who is another team that's got 2 losses but is capable of beating either one of them. So, you know, it's dominoes have to fall for our guys, but it could happen.
Well, it seems
ESPN to me last night said
it probably won't, and when if they get in the playoff, they're probably just going to go get eliminated right off the bat. But that doesn't matter. My prerogative is always to be in the playoffs, competing. You never know. You know, if you get hot at the right time, you get the right breaks, you go somewhere.
Maybe what you're saying?
Yeah, ESPN, they sort of, I guess, handicapped it, and they gave Notre Dame a 52% chance of making the playoff based on remaining matchups that Kevin detailed. So it's a coin flip.
Yeah. Well,
those kind of dominoes falling, that's the way New Year's Day used to be. You know, when they didn't try to engineer a championship game or any of that, that was what made New Year's Day the best sports day of the year, because, hey, sometimes everything held to form and the championship was decided by the time you ever got around to the Rose Bowl or the Orange Bowl. But often enough, it was a matter of seeing how the dominoes would fall. And, the year that Joe Montana's Notre Dame team won the national championship, I think they went from 5-1 on New Year's Day.
Yeah, well, we got a dash, but Joel was thinking that he says Ohio State has really improved as the year went on. I mean, he says they have 5 guys that are
well. I think
fire.
A lot of teams have.
Yeah. Some haven't.
We'll see. And you know, Alabama didn't look good at the beginning of the year. I won't be surprised if they go out and beat Georgia. I think Georgia should win that one, but I won't be surprised if Alabama does. And if they do, then you're probably going to see 2 SEC teams. And you can kiss, Notre Dame and maybe a few others goodbye.
Well, when is that game? Saturday?
No, that'll be the SEC championship.
SEC championship first weekend of December. So Saturday, I believe Alabama's playing its rivalry game with Auburn. And again, you don't know what happens with rivalry games either. They can be unpredictable.
Yeah, I saw Auburn play a couple weeks ago. They didn't look that hot. You know, I was, we got a dash here, but you know, I was pretty stunned. I don't because I was hope, well, not hoping. I was expecting to see Oregon pretty good. Boy, Utah just destroyed those guys. Utah,
yeah,
are they terrible?
Took them apart, so.
Where do they get all their people? Are they transfers to Utah or what?
You know what? Don't know. I'd have to look into it, but they, you know, they're consistently pretty good anyway.
Yeah, they've been a good program for decades.
I mean, well, that game was not a fluke. It wasn't like there was, you know, three turnovers.
Yeah, I think they're like 8-3. It's not like they're a bad team. They're just they have a couple early season losses.
Yeah, that's well. All right, S&P futures down 16, NASDAQ futures down 76. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Schmidt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 73. So is Nagy in or out, Manny? Why didn't you break the news? You're sports, I guess he's on the phone with Russell. But here's an interesting article. There's a couple of them here. Kathy Wood says her firm is testing a more aggressive strategy. It'll be ARK on steroids. ARK is down from 162 at its top this year to like 105. Not so sure you want that on steroids. I'm just saying. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little late again. There's a delay. I listen to you guys on the podcast, and there's a delay because I just stopped listening to the podcast and called you.
Really?
I'm gonna have to talk to engineering and whatnot people about that one.
So what do you think? So about
I do
your...
want to before we get into what I wanted to talk about. Now you know Oklahoma State. We're gonna leapfrog your Irish. I'm just letting you know.
You could very well. As your girlfriend here, Kathy Wood, is putting together a firm that says it's going to be ARK and steroids.
Mm-hmm.
I thought ARK was already on steroids. It's going from 162 to 105. Well, how do you want to? Well, what more do you want to do on that?
Well, no, that's coming off of steroids, isn't it?
It's coming off of something. And
I don't know what happens when you stop taking steroids.
I got to get on some. I mean, I need some.
Yeah.
Can I get up my bench, Manny?
Well, regarding the Matt Nagy thing, all I've read is that he met with ownership yesterday morning, and then he canceled a bunch of meetings after the meeting. So a lot of people thought, oh, wow, there's going to be an announcement, you know, and then nothing came out. And I also know that the Bears have never fired a coach in season. Apparently, in like their 101-year history, they've never fired a head coach in the middle of the season. So maybe they told him you're done at the end of the year, and he wanted some time to process that, so he took those meetings off. Or maybe there's an announcement coming soon after the Thanksgiving game. They just didn't want to announce it during a short three-day week. I don't know, but I guess we'll find out soon.
What specifically, other than the fact he doesn't have enough players, and that they, you know, they bombed on their tackle and then they cut their other two tackles, what specifically, I mean, obviously he has so many people coming and going in a defensive backfield that they miss assignments under pressure. Is that all on him? I mean, some of it is, I guess, but.
Well,
I
think my thing on him is that, from what I've read, is that he's lost the locker room. And that's all that matters. I mean, you can't control injuries. You can't control the talent that you're given. If you're a coach, you know, that's obviously up to the general manager. You can't control, you know, obviously what you can control is keeping the locker room, keep guys playing as hard as they possibly can, game management once you're in between the lines. And when you lose the locker room, there's no coming back. And so that's what I've heard. That's the rumor.
What exactly does that mean? I mean, he's not a guy.
When guys noticeably tune you out, when they undermine you, when you know, that type of thing.
He doesn't seem like he's. I've never once heard him badmouth a guy. Have you?
No, I don't think I have.
You lose any kind
you
of
you can argument. Lose the respect. I've been in Oregon. I've never played professional sports, but I've been on teams in high school and or in the professional world where you have good leaders, and even when things are going bad, you still buy into the message. So, you know, if maybe they take over a company that's sputtering or failing. Things are going bad. I mean, on the field, you're still getting your butt kicked, but you're buying into the message. And that's a good leader. I've also been in organizations where things are going well or things are in maintenance mode or whatever, but the leadership is just awful, and you're like, wow, things are going fine, or maybe they're starting to sputter, but this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I better get out of here because this is a sinking ship. You can tell the difference in a lot of cases, and it seems to me like they're not buying into the message.
We'll get to more important things here in a second, but you and I have talked about this more on the way in than any other time, Eddie. And, I love Russell's opinion because leadership crosses across everything. I wonder if it's almost impossible, given the difference in age and the difference in, let's say, hopefully the parts on the curve between the offense and the defense, how you can possibly hold this together. You've got probably five or six guys on the defense. But this is, they're getting close to their swan song and thought they were going to be on a serious team here, and they're not. And, I mean, guys like, you know, Khalil Mack doesn't want to go out like this. Neither does,
I think there's something to that, but then all you have to do is look at the Patriots and, you know, they have a rookie quarterback, a bunch of young guys on offense, and then they have a veteran good defense. And last year they had the one down year, you know, post Brady, and this year they're right back in it, and they're now favored to win the AFC. A lot of people are thinking they're favored to win the entire AFC again, and because that organization from top to bottom, and it starts with Belichick and the ownership and everything else, doesn't let your mind drift like that. Even when they had a bad year last year, no one quit on that team. No one stopped playing hard. He never lost the locker room. And then now, even though the defense is more veteran and older, and the offense is younger and more mistake prone and has a rookie quarterback, they're still clicking. After a 2-4 start, they've won 5 in a row and are now 7-4, and they're world beaters again.
If you go back, compare those two teams, 20 years, and look at how many people in the 4th, 5th, 6th round, where if somebody gets hurt, they manage to find a guy to prop in there, and if somebody doesn't come along the party line, even if you're a guy in a special teams, they find somebody better than you the next day. The difference in the front office is dramatic between those two teams.
Yeah, Belichick is the front office.
Is he the general manager too?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. I thought he was for a while, and then he wasn't.
No, I mean, they've got guys that, you know, they've got other guys too, but he's the man.
I read something one day.
He has final say on personnel and on the field.
I read something, Russell. Sorry, but they took all these different teams and those guys and just they forgot about the first three rounds. They just took the last, was it three rounds or four rounds? And the difference in years, well, they'll trade somebody a fifth and a sixth for a fourth, and then the people who drafted the fifth and the sixth. The guys didn't even make it through training camp, and yet their fourth is somewhere else. Then the next year, they do something opposite, where they trade their fourth for two sixths or something. All of a sudden, the 2 sixths are still in football, and the 1 fourth isn't. Their knowledge of the underside of the draft, they must invest way more money than anybody else does, or else they think those people are more valuable or whatever.
Well, they're certainly good at drafting defensive players, and then they've hit on two quarterbacks. They've been awful at drafting offensive players, especially skill players. So, you know, they have their strengths just like every team.
Well, they drafted Gronk. They drafted, who was the other guy?
That's it. Yeah, they drafted Gronk. That was a big hit. They've whiffed on all the receivers. They've whiffed on their running back picks, and then they've whiffed on about half of their offensive line picks. They've hit on some.
Well, the kid this year is really good. He's got hurt.
But their quarterbacks, they've obviously hit on Brady in the sixth round, and then it appears with four guys drafted ahead of Mac Jones, they hit on Mac Jones. And so that looks good. And then on defense, they've done really well drafting.
Well, if you can pick a quarterback that lasts, even if he's not, you know, all world, if he lasts 12 years, that's 11 other number one picks you can use elsewhere. It was like when the Bears had Walter Payton, and everybody in those days, people were using a number one pick and a halfback every 4 years, and the Bears had the guy for 12. So that just, they were able to use it other places. Look how good the rest of the team was.
Well, if your quarterback's not all world, you're not winning anything.
But I'm saying,
so
if he's...
How can I put that? In today's football.
Well, I mean, Rivers or something was not all world.
Right, and he didn't win anything.
Okay, but he also allowed you to fill in the rest of the team because you weren't going to draft anybody much better than him. You know what I'm saying? You didn't waste. The Bears have wasted how many number one picks on quarterbacks in the last 20 years? 8?
Via trade and or drafts.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, that's 8 other people that could be in the Hall of Fame, right? Number one picks are supposed to be, you know, some chance to be in the Hall of Fame, right?
They're supposed to be good yeah. players, absolutely.
All right, Russell, we got, we've decided we're going to make it difficult for the oil industry, but now we're going to be the guy who lowers gas prices by pulling stuff out of the strategic reserve. We've got the we're going to work on inflation to beat the ban, and the money supply came out from last month, and it's over 12% annual growth again. What are we doing here?
The Strategic Petroleum Reserve, you know how many days of oil consumption in the U.S. that covers, right?
Kevin said like 2 or something, 3?
It's 3. It's basically, it's about 3 or so. I tweeted something about that yesterday, and then I know that this isn't exactly how it happened, but I tweeted something about that, and a reporter specifically asked the Secretary of, Energy, who I don't know if she knows anything about the energy markets, asked her that question, and she said she was like, I don't have that number in front of me. I don't know.
That's
the first thing I did was I wanted to take that $50 million barrel thing and put it in context of demand. Global demand's about 90 million a day.
Yeah.
And saying that it's coordinated, you know, that it was like us and a bunch of partners, I think India released 5 million barrels. So they released about, 2 hours worth of oil consumption.
But now you don't have it anymore. You can't do it again, right?
Yeah, and you can't do it. And the other thing that I haven't heard anybody bring up, and I thought I saw in passing one of the ways that they're paying for the infrastructure bill and doing it without raising taxes was they were going to sell oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in the future. So are they going to be able, you know, are they still going to have it to do that?
Apparently
there's a rule somewhere in place that they're not supposed to release more than 30 million barrels at once. So they're just kind of willy-nilly doing what the hell they want.
Russell, years ago I read some article regarding how inefficient it would be to actually get the various types of oils that are in these things, to try and get them to the right refinery and try and make gas out of them anytime soon. Is that chance? Do we have a pipe?
No. There's different types. Like in Chicago, we have... Yeah, we have our own gas.
No, I'm talking about the oil 30 years ago that somebody pumped in these reserves. It's been sitting underground.
Getting it out. And, yeah, I guess it does have to get somewhere, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, is it?
I didn't even think about that part.
So
our supply chain is as efficient as it's ever been.
I mean, I can't believe that there's like 3 major spots that maybe I should give more credit. That they're sequestered into, each one has a certain type of oil, and each one has a pipeline directly to a refinery that is ready for that type of oil. I don't believe that for a second, do you?
No, I don't believe, I severely doubt that one.
So, I mean, what are we talking about? We're trying to get some trucks, loading them up, and driving them someplace? Or put them on rail cars? What are we doing? Rail cars, maybe?
I assume it would be rail cars, but, you know. That one goes beyond my pay grade. Although what I'm doing is I've got a person who's extremely knowledgeable about the energy market, and I'm sending her a message right now and asking, you know, that very thing.
Would she like? Ask her if she wants to come out with you next Wednesday. Ask her if she wants to come out with you next Wednesday. That'd be great.
Well, and you guys would love her because she used to be a Southern Cal cheerleader.
We're not that shallow. We'd love her anyway.
Okay. All right, yeah. And I was saying because, you know, the Notre Dame-USC thing. Not
yes.
necessarily because that she was associated with one of your rivals.
I dated a high school All-American cheerleader when I got to school.
Did you really?
1 week.
What did that cost you?
1 week.
Okay. So it cost small, you a week of your life.
No. It was I lasted about a week until she found an older guy with a car and I was out.
Wow, that sounds very familiar.
Oh yeah, I was a freshman. She went out with a freshman for about 1 week. That was me. That was it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was a big shot in the Notre Dame team. She was like, I didn't realize it did have such a thing as a high school. It was Kodak did that, right? Wasn't it a Kodak All-America cheerleader? Kodak did all that stuff?
A billion years ago, maybe.
Yeah, they were big sponsors of cheerleading and everything. Mm-hmm. So, Russell, where is this?
I tweeted something. Are we going to talk about what I tweeted?
Yeah.
Oh, you would have been in heaven in my at the Kelly School. We have a whole ton of different programs, and one of them is I have to have this in front of me for the title. It's like a graduate certificate in medical management, I think is what it's called. It's like 5 graduate classes, and it takes healthcare professionals and gets them some business skills. And, yeah, it's a graduate certificate, and it's GCMM, and I believe that's medical management. And they asked me to teach one of the classes in it, and I'm teaching value and finance and healthcare. And it's, you know, everybody in the class is, they're all pretty much concentrated in the Indiana area, which is unusual for our online programs. But I wanted to talk about inflation. I want to introduce inflation in our first class. And I broke out inflation by the different things that go into CPI. And, you know, CPI is, and I used the one with energy just to show how much energy had gone up. Energy, vehicles, food, transportation, and the healthcare stuff. And the healthcare stuff, to my astonishment, the CPI, the October number, medical care commodities, which would be, you know, all the Band-Aids and all that kind of stuff that they ship around, the price has ticked down slightly.
Did you get further
and
down?
And medical care services, I mean, these were the two lowest numbers for the CPI, and medical care services were about 2 or
3%. Did you dig further down the list? Further down the list, out of the medical care section, why it is, I don't mm-hmm. know. If you dig further down, you'll see a line about health insurance, and it has it down last year like 5%. When was the last time?
That was...
You see that?
That was... a little part of it, but that, and we talked about that as well, but what I found out and what may lead to a CPI surprise in early 2022 is that the reason the medical care commodity, the reason the prices are under a little bit of pressure haven't risen as much as everything else is because the big hospitals leverage themselves and the medical device suppliers and everything are stuck on like annual contracts. And because a lot of elective surgeries and whatnot were not going on this past year, some of the medical supply stuff came under a little bit of pressure. Well, now they're seeing, now this past year, they've seen the impact of the supply chain issues, and they were telling me, they started medical speak around me like, well, you know, we're normally supposed to hook somebody up to a 200cc thing, or no, normally a 100cc thing. The 100cc things we can't find anywhere, so we're using 200 and we're filling them halfway up. You know, just things like that, how they're, for lack of a better way to put it, like, you know, if you normally, you don't have any more small Band-Aids left, and you can just use a big one, well, they're using the big ones, and they're starting to see, you know, their shelves look like some of our grocery store shelves. But what's going to happen is, because of the supply chain issues, when the hospital groups start to renegotiate their supply contracts, you're going to see a bump in that price.
What
whether it gets passed on to consumers or not, so... we keep seeing pockets of inflation where it was energy. Initially, it was like used cars, which are still going up. I think we're going to see it in the food space because they seem to be preparing us for that by telling us that we could get more nutrition out of eating soybeans tomorrow at Thanksgiving as opposed to eating turkey. I heard something on the radio about that with my kids in the car yesterday, which led to a really fun discussion about how inflation works and all of that. But it's not been showing up in the healthcare space, but it's gonna.
What, when you say,
you know, I think when we're like, oh, look, strategic petroleum, it pushed energy prices down a little bit. But I'll bet you they rebound right back when people realize that it's a drop in the bucket. Come February or March, the healthcare thing is going to be the thing that comes around and bumps us up as far as inflation goes.
When Kyle talks about the labor numbers, there are there are specific months that are the, I'm going to use the term catch up or adjustment month.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of reasons for that. Sometimes you don't know how many 1099 employees out there, plus or minus, until you know you get the checks or they file a return type of thing. So there's sort of reasons for that. Are there? I mean, I noticed, and I suspect you going through this stuff on the CPI, you notice stuff that let's say doesn't quite make sense. I'm not going to say it's flat out wrong or it's a flat out lie, even though I just did. Is there a specific, the one that is blaring in front of my face, obviously, I mean, where can I go with this? Somebody somewhere is spending all day long trying to find out the price of brown rice and white rice and yellow rice and the detail that's in that CPI, and I would never accuse that person of screwing around with the price of rice, literally, as they say in the South Side, that somehow the price of brown rice is up to 50 cents a pound when it's, and a guy's going to report 45 just to help out Trump or Biden. I mean, I got to believe at some level that people report what they're supposed to report, and it's somewhat legit. Now, when then you see something where I believe if you went through the housing, you're going to see rent up, not owner's equivalent rent, but regular rent of primary residence, I think, 2.7, 2.9, something like that. I'm trying to recall this whole table, which I can't do. I'm going to say 2.7, and yet last week, some, you know, pretty serious nationwide rent place said last year was, what, 10.65 or something. We're not even on the same planet, Russell. I mean, is there...
No.
But I'm saying, is there a specific adjustment month where where we attempt to take this from a very lagging indicator to something that where everybody knows, well, not everybody, because you and I don't know, or I don't know, so I'm asking you, is there like a month in January, or where Carl could tell you when the adjustment month is on the labor statistics, is there a month like January where somebody says, hey, I don't know why we got this rent at 2%, it sure looks like 10, we better do something. Is there such a month? I'm thinking the answer is no.
There's a month where they adjust how it's calculated. Like, you know, let's say that we didn't even have PCs a long time ago, and they weren't really accounting for those things. And I think every 2 years they adjust all of the weighting. They don't necessarily adjust, you know, the cost, but if we're all suddenly having to spend a lot more money on, you know, food as a percentage of our income, they're going to make that a bigger weighting. So they're, and I think it's every other year they do that.
Okay, but there's
I read a lot about how it's calculated because I was trying to anticipate questions that I might get from, you know, the class. And I also, I only put one slide on Twitter and only sent you one slide, but the slide before it shows what the thing that you like to focus in on a lot, which is the breakdown. And that breakdown gets readjusted every couple of years. Like, okay, the breakdown has us at, you know, 42-43% housing, has healthcare at, you know, a little under 9%, has education at, you know, a little under 7%.
Okay,
and I can tell you with a couple of kids in private school that I'm in, you know, probably going to the most expensive college they can find. that education is more than 7% of what I spend every year.
Two questions. Now, I'm just a mm-hmm. dummy in the back of the class that's raising his hand when everybody else wants to leave. If you spotted medical up to 9, that's a revision from the last time I looked at it. Or maybe I was reading it wrong. I had it like 7.7. Mm-hmm. When I first started doing this, first started the show, or when I was on the show with John, I'm going to say 10 years ago, it was 6. So it's made its way from a little over 6 to, if you say 9, I believe you. Yet it's 20% of the GDP. We're not even close. I mean,
that was another thing that came up in class, was that as a percentage of GDP, healthcare is like 20%.
That's what I'm saying.
But as part of the CPI, it's like 9.
Well, I'm saying, and that's up.
There's a huge disconnect there.
But it's up from 6. When I first started, it was 6, then it was 7, and last time I looked, I thought it was like 7.8. Now you're saying it's up to 9, which I believe you, because mm-hmm.
Looked at the number. I try to be prepared because, man, I know I sound like an ad for the Kelly School of Business, but oh my God, the students intimidate me.
Oh, you know, hey, you know what though? That means you got a good class, and they're coming, interchanging back and forth with you. I mean, that's the
it's great.
Well, as you know, at the grant,
they're all on the healthcare end, and I think we're. I don't want to say we're solving the world's problems, but and I'm not good at leading discussion classes. I'm good at teaching technical topics. But the first class that I taught in this program was the best discussion that I've ever had in a class.
Do you guys have a specific? When I was even in Chicago, they were the only school that had an MBA in hospital management. Do you guys actually have an MBA with that name on it now?
I do think we have something. There's so many programs, man. I'm still trying to get up to speed there.
But I mean,
but we do have, and this certificate program. A good number of the students decide to go on and continue into the MBA program.
Well, so you said, we're going to go on a break here, but then you've said that 3 times on a certificate program. When you come back, you got to give us the definition. It sounds like almost like a bachelor degree with honors, but. When you come back, you can explain that to us. S&P futures up, I'm sorry, down 14, NASDAQ futures down 57. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, Monk Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Warren on the board. We also have Mr. Russell Rhodes from the University of Indiana Business School. SP Features Down 10. As
IU,
down.
Indiana University, right?
Same thing, isn't it?
I don't know. They specifically say IU.
They don't say the Ohio State.
They don't say
State.
U of I, like Illinois.
They don't say the Ohio State.
They don't say the Ohio State University. I think if they say IU, you would have to say it's Indiana University. Anyway, go ahead.
Whatever. It's, we know where he is.
I know.
Saying, you know, down on 136. We're in Europe. Everybody's so specific these days. We know which direction to go. We know southwest or southeast we want to get them, right?
Do you hate it when people say it's down there and the place they're talking about is north of you? That drives me nuts.
Me too. Yeah. It's people don't know
some things you do need to be specific about.
What about east or west? That doesn't
you say
matter.
Over there.
Either way?
Or either, yeah.
Either way.
If you're going north, you say up there. If you're going south, you say down there. If you're going east or west, you say over there or out there.
So you're up to Green Bay, down to Indianapolis, and over to Des Moines.
There you go.
Okay. That's probably true. Dax down 119.7%. FTSE up 7.1%. CAC around down 29.4%. Not much going on over in Europe. Asia continues to be a mixed bag. Today, Nikkei down 471. After they had a couple up days, that's 1.6%. Shanghai almost flat, up 3. That's 0.1%. Hang Seng up 0.1, and because those guys were down earlier in the week. So, kind of crazy. Yesterday, Dow made it up 194. S&P up 7. And NASDAQ connected out of its own way was down 79. That's been what's leading us down the last few days after it was leading us up last week. Bonds. Unchanged at 1.67, Bund minus 0.22, Japan positive 0.08, so really unchanged across the board here. Oil down 4 cents, 78.46, Brent down 7 cents, 82.24, so in the last really week or two, oil's down almost 10% before we are going to do this reserve stuff, and now it's pretty much unchanged since they announced it. So I don't know, it was either telegraphed or it doesn't make any difference, one or the other. Natural gas up 3 cents to exactly $5. $5. RBOB down a penny, 232. We've got gold down 50 cents, 1783. Silver up 2 cents, 2345. Copper up 4 cents, 446. So gold is staying under 1800. Dollar remains strong, and we have a Bitcoin market, a Bitcoin down $1,000 to 56,576. We also have jobless claims fall to 199, lowest level since 1969. And we also have, those economic indicators are down. They're supposed to be up, they're down. Maybe we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That road construction on the tri-state was picked up, apparently, which is great news, and then it was followed by a crash. Now we have a crash on the southbound tri-state just before the Stevenson there. That's blocking the left lane, and that's causing stop-and-go traffic if you're heading southbound on I-294. So that's the only crash on the area expressways. We're having pretty much light traffic today as it's the day before Thanksgiving. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Earlier crash on the Bishop Ford is all clear, too, so that's good news. Stevenson itself is looking good. Same for the Eisenhower. Northside expressways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Only other crash in the area is up in the northern suburbs. It says an accident here with injuries on Tower Road at Forest Way Drive. A pedestrian was struck by a vehicle.
Oh.
That's not good, and that happened earlier in the 7 o'clock local time hour here, so about a half hour ago. And that has emergency crews on the scene. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy skies, but a bit warmer. We'll reach a high of 51. Right now it's overcast and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, Blackhawks lost up in Calgary to the Flames 5-2. Coyotes were off. Bulls were off as well. Bulls are back in action tonight down in Houston to take on the Rockets. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Suns were off last night. They're in Cleveland this evening. They'll tip off at 5 p.m. Arizona time. College football, Northern Illinois lost big to Western Michigan 42-21. And in college hoops, Illinois beat Kansas State 72-64. Northwestern beat Georgia 78-62. and it was Notre Dame blowing out Chaminade 90-64.
Chief. So, Maddie, you've been doing traffic and weather now for a while. Why does it shock you that after a traffic backup has been picked up, that there's an immediate crash? Because everybody gets now... So if you've been delayed, the speed limits do not count.
Right.
You get to go as fast as you want.
Of course.
So 10 people have to bang into each other and then make it worse again.
Oh, yeah. It opens up like the Red Sea once you get past the construction, and then you got to go 100 miles per hour, and everyone's got to find their own lane.
Yeah, you definitely have to work that way. So you guys have a... First of all...
Okay, I got some answers on the oil before you go in another direction.
Okay.
Okay, so she, and also she said, even though you're Notre Dame guy, she might be willing to come on sometime.
That's okay.
She said that the announcement was pretty vague, you know, and that it's actually the 50 million barrels is going to be auctioned off over several months. On a supply and demand basis, this doesn't mean a darn thing. And boy, did I just censor myself. That's my adding to it. And then I've also asked about the physical, physical getting it there, and didn't really get an answer about once you get it out, how long does it take? You know, does it take longer to get to market than, you know, something that gets delivered in New Orleans? And, I think that one probably deserves a little bit of research. So. That's the answer I got on the oil. In reality, other than, you know what, it's almost like a pal showed up and said we're raising rates and then they didn't raise rates.
Yeah, yes.
And it's really kind of a weak, and when I saw that India, you know, they were getting other countries to come along and India was only going to contribute 5 million barrels, I was like, oh my gosh, this is nothing compared, it's a nothing burger. So you were going to let me talk about the...
Wait a minute, no.
Medical management.
Okay, but wait a second. Before you roll that far, since I don't know the answer to this, let's say a medium tanker. How many barrels is on a medium tanker? Just so we get some kind of an idea of what we're talking about here. Are we talking about two tankers, one tanker, 10 tankers?
Barrels of oil in a tanker. Largest tankers carry 2 million barrels of oil a day, can carry up to 2 million barrels. So that's right. The largest one.
Right, so if they blew up...
You know what, let's just say it's 33 tankers.
All right, and that's... So the
1.5 million times 33.
So the auction probably is something bizarre, like if you bid for it, you get to show up with your railroad cars, and it's free on board there... Right, they're not shipping it anyplace. You got to come and get it. You got to, unless there's a pipeline, which I sort of doubt. You got to come and get it, and whatever grade it happens to be, you're wearing it. It would be my guess. Mm-hmm.
It's very possible. So.
Well, tell me.
I do know that after seeing the Secretary of Energy talk about the energy markets and kind of flubbing through it yesterday, I do want to be on the other side of trades from her.
Yeah,
especially energy trade.
Just in general, if
oh my goodness, she's not even an American. She moved here from Canada.
Just in general, when you get one of those jobs, unless you, if you and I became president, the co-presidency, there's only one spot I know that I would. He probably, who don't know if he'd take the job. I'd want Lou in charge of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah,
because I think he knows a lot about it.
You're going to make me Secretary of the Treasury.
I could do that. You wouldn't want to be the head of the Fed?
I want to sign the money.
We want you the head of the Fed, though.
Oh, my God. You know what? I think in your effort to streamline government, you would just make it one job.
Well, the way they're going now, it should be one job, pretty much. But,
yeah.
But I mean, right. Just a normal secretary is somebody. What do you think they know about anything? When you put them in?
Not a whole lot. Hopefully they're right. I felt like she was put up there and not briefed as well as she could have been. Honestly, I kind of felt a little sorry for her.
All right, so what are these certificates you guys are doing down
there? Okay, well, they've got a handful of certificate programs, and because, like, my office, my office down in Indianapolis, I can actually see the big hospital, the Indiana University, which... I'm still messing that one up every once in a while. At the Indiana University Hospital. So we've got, you know, we've got a handful of graduate programs that are like 1 year programs that aren't full degrees. This one's graduate certificate in medical management. It's 4 quarters. You can show up at any quarter and start. So I had a couple of new students in my class last week. And basically if you choose after doing that program, if you would like to pursue a MBA from Kelly, you can actually use those credits toward that.
Okay,
but it's a program for, and I think this is, and actually I do think it's not like I'm talking my book because I work there. I think that there are people in the healthcare industry that can really benefit from learning about business. And back when I was in college, I had a friend that went to seminary and had become, like, you know, the assistant preacher, minister or whatever at a Methodist church. And I saw him in the business school at Memphis State, and he was getting a business degree at the same time because he said, eventually when I run up and I'm head of a church, I'm going to be running a business, and I want to have business skills. And I think, you know, there are certain areas where you end up running businesses like that. And also, if you're a doctor with your own practice, that you do need some business skills.
Well, would you be comfortable
filling that?
Would you be comfortable as a minister having, like, Thomas and Maddie passing the hat?
I would keep a close eye on who passes the hat.
I wouldn't trust myself passing the hat.
I would.
I was the passing the hat, and I can't believe they let me do it back in the day.
Hey, just as a general question regarding your school of business, there's kind of two styles. One is my brother went to DePaul, and I guess they were the usual 20 courses before you're out, but he was able to, he was already a CPA, to essentially pass out of the accounting courses, so he was only required to take 12 courses for his MBA because he kind of combined it with his undergrad, even though the undergrad was at Notre Dame. University of Chicago, you take 20 courses, they don't care if you're Solomon, you're taking 20 courses. So I was able to pass out of my economics, which meant I get to take more economics, but I could have taken 12 courses in law. It didn't matter, but you weren't getting out of there mm-hmm. without paying those guys 20 courses. Are you guys you gotta take a certain amount of courses, or if you pass out, you take less style?
I don't, you know, I think I know, but I'm not 100% sure, so I'm not going to say.
I mean, either one is it's
right, yeah, because I've been there for 3 months and 4 months, goodness gracious. And, I'm focusing in on teaching my own class. And again, it's such a, I equate my move from Loyola to Indiana, because I love to equate myself to Don Draper going from the small firm to a giant advertising firm where there's so many moving parts, you're overwhelmed. And I'm still, you know, learning more and more about everything within the school.
Do you have basketball tickets?
I'm really hoping for I know I'm changing direct. I think I can get basketball tickets. I haven't tried to yet. I'm hoping that I can, because I've been to several of the places that you like to go to see a basketball game, like, you know, Lawrence, Kansas, and Duke, and all that kind. I have not been to a game at Alumni Hall. It's Alumni Hall, right?
Well, I got news for you. If you have a season, you don't know you have a season ticket now, you probably don't. They probably played 5 games.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sure there's a way for me to get access to tickets. I know there's a way for me to get access to tickets when they play the NCAA stuff in Indianapolis as well. You know, the NCAA football championship game is in Indianapolis, and hotel rooms are going to be in a premium. If Notre Dame makes it, you better be nice to me, and I might let you stay on my couch.
That's now we're talking.
There you go.
By the way, it's called Assembly Hall.
Assembly Hall, sorry.
That's okay. Just don't say it too loud there. Alumni Hall was somewhere.
DePaul.
I can't remember. Was that DePaul?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, the Big Ten championship football game is in Indianapolis every year. And if Iowa makes it, which they will make it if they beat Nebraska and Wisconsin loses at Minnesota, so it's possible. then we're going to go to Indianapolis next week, Saturday. We did that 5 years ago when they went, and it was about as fun as you can have for a sporting event. You drink all day downtown and then sort of walk your way to the stadium, and it was pretty good.
Yeah. No, the city, it's a great, my daughter and I went to the Sweet 16 down there, and I'm in Chicago today, so that's why I said down there, before I even knew I was going to go work in Indiana. And, it's really set up great for a sporting event like that.
Well, the basketball field house, I was there tonight it opened. I was there tonight it opened.
1927?
No, the basketball arena. This is the new one.
That was a joke.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a while ago. I remember
it opened in 1971.
I was there.
There you go.
And I'll tell you what, the drive from South Bend to Indianapolis when Route 31
Bloomington.
Was... Well, you had to go through it. Route 30 was before it was the interstate. So you had to take 31.
Still the way, you know what? It's still the way you go, because I had to drive to South Bend from Indianapolis last week when I was... or 2 weeks ago when I was doing that road show for the Kelly School. And I took 30 all the way up, and my thought was, I can only imagine what this was like on a football game day.
Well, it was Tulane. It was the main drag through every town you went through. There was no bypasses. Mm-hmm.
Four lanes now, but it's still not expressway.
How long did it take in 1971? Like 4 hours?
It was you went right through Indianapolis.
Well, they had to stop and water the horses.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not that far of a drive, but it was a way. It took a while, and we got there.
How many horses?
Next, you're going to ask me to guess what the score of the game was.
I'm sure it was a lot to a little.
The Irish lost, I'm going to say, 90-something to 27.
Wow.
Yeah. Indiana was a powerhouse, and I think Notre Dame was transitioning, were they not?
That's a great word. It was Digger Phelps' first year.
Yeah, so Digger obviously got it turned around, but... Yeah, speaking of horses, he didn't have the horses.
He had no horses. Matter of fact, I'll tell you how bad it was. Just now we're on the topic, because we're going to get back to the market here in a second. I think Indiana had Downing and a couple other guys that were like really good. The Irish had, well, my freshman year, they had Austin Carr and those guys that really almost could have, they beat UCLA. They were one of the top five teams in the country, and Austin Carr might have been the best ball player in the country. They all graduated, everyone, and the coach quit. Or got fired with all his guys. So there's Digger, and he had Sammy Puckett. It was my year that should have played, but he flunked out. They had John Shoemaker, who got a blood clot. Another guy was in an automobile accident, and they had cut his leg off, so he couldn't play. And then some other guy joined the Peace Corps. So if Ara Parseghian didn't give them the Townsend brothers, Willie and Mike, two really good guys, they would have been, I don't know what they would have even done, Manny. I don't think they had like four or five scholarship guys. And they were all sophomores. I mean, it had to be the worst college basketball team ever put together. Because guys got hurt and went and flunked out. And that's a guy from Hills Franciscan flunk out, and he was one of the best basketball players. Isaiah Thomas was asked one day, "Who's the best basketball player you ever played against?" And he said, "This guy from Chicago named Sammy Puckett was on when I was in high school." That's how good this guy was.
It's crazy.
He was giving Austin Carr fits when he was a freshman. No, Boston Carr was better, but this kid was unreal. He was the Isaiah Thomas of his time, like a 6 foot, a light skin, real good looking black guy. It just was always dressed well, and the guy got all Fs. And he came from Hales Franciscan with a tutor. He was just gone. I hope the guy's still alive someplace, but I mean, he's a Chicago legend, and he lasted half a semester. To this day, I don't know what the hell happened to the guy. And I really wish the life had been different for him. I mean, I don't know if he had problems at home or what, but everybody said he was the world's greatest guy, too. Anyway, strange story. So what one of these guys, boy, talking about page two, the great inflation fighter, Powell and Janet Yellen and Biden, what are they going to do here? Are they actually going to do anything, Russell, or are they still in disbelief?
I'm so much better when I listen to the first hour, and you guys talked about, we're talking about how politicians are seem to be completely out of touch. And I think that's part of the problem. Remember when, the first President Bush was running for president? He went to a grocery store and he was fascinated that they didn't key things in anymore. They scanned them in.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that, you know, that Nancy Pelosi is going to the grocery store on the weekend. You know, no. She just shows up and knows that her ice cream fridge is full of ice cream.
Well, I'm, there's
know,
an article.
I just don't think that they're, that it's supposed to be a representative government, and I don't think their collective experience represents the American experience, and that disconnect is the problem.
I,
well said.
There's an article here.
See what happens when I prep?
Yeah. Ooh. You see, there's one here on CNBC.
No, I just don't think it on both levels. They don't, you know, they don't worry about month-to-month paychecks. And I grew up in a family where we had some real financial problems when I was growing up. You know, like, change it, you know, yanked out of a private school mid-semester, mid-school year. Although I'm not sure if they kicked me out or we couldn't pay the bill. I can't remember which one it was. But either way, you know, losing the house, going through all of that kind of stuff. Politicians don't, and once you've been elected to something, it's almost like you've got at least some sort of income security for life.
Well,
that's not all of us.
We used to have her on the...
No, I mean, I'm 54 and I still don't feel totally secure for life.
Oh, yeah. We had...
And I'm 2 weeks from a PhD and, you know, whatever. You know, I'm not...
Wait a minute, you got 2 weeks from a PhD?
I shouldn't... If I've worked as hard as I have and got enough credentials and I still worry about my future, I can only imagine the average person.
Well, if you
politicians don't.
Russell, if you weren't a worrier to start with, which you are a little bit, so am I, so I'm not giving you crap about that, the last year and a half with COVID is going to make you a worrier.
Yeah. That does not help.
Well, probably have not had a chance this morning. Article here by, here's a name though. If Matty didn't already have a beautiful wife, he'd be all over this lady. Patty Dom. Now there's a name, huh?
That is a good name.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys who would want her phone number right now, I think. Anyway, not since America came from home from World War II has inflation run through the economy like it is now. She obviously has missed the late 70s, early 80s, but so she missed a decade.
Yeah.
But it's actually I think it's very well written. She obviously did some research. But she goes, the cost went up faster than the price. The average home was up $60,000. This is like in the last year or so. The average 2x4, for example, over the course of the past year from July 2020 to July 2020 went from $4.30 to $11.36. Now that is now about 50% lower, but some are still viable. So 50% lower still puts you almost like $6, so it's still higher. But it's interesting that they constantly go through this long list of supply chain issues and pent-up demand and lifestyle changes. And why doesn't everybody just say it's a currency event? I mean, we've been pounding money into this place for we're pushing 14 years now since 2007, right? And why?
Do you think if Trump had won the presidency again, that they may blame the government a bit more instead of looking around for excuses? And I hate being like that, but it does seem like there is a bias to try to deflect the responsibility from D.C. right now.
I just think there's not a collective memory of it. I think we're just totally...
I don't think that either, but you can do the research and, you know, but I think if you're doing the, you know, my PhD is on, you know, heuristics, so I'm always thinking like this. If you're going into the research trying to come up with reasons that are not your guy's fault, you're going to find those reasons. If you go into it and you're trying to, you know, find the problem and pin it on some guy, that's what you're going to find as well.
We always talk about that.
That's really what I hate being like that, and I always try to believe the best in people, but I've given up on that. I do think that there is there's an effort to kind of protect the current administration from stuff.
We always talk about that. If you have a preconceived sort of answer or result before you begin your research is already tainted.
Yeah.
Well, Manny, you don't...
And it's tough not to, you know, put biases in there. I mean, I'm... I, I, I'm doing it with the oil thing. I'm automatically, when it was announced, I automatically started to, my first thought was, where is 50 million barrels relative to global demand? And because I knew it wasn't that, you know,
well, you know it's not that much.
It's much higher than that number. And that I was automatically looking for a reason that this isn't that big of a deal.
Well, the last comment, based on what Maddie just said, Maddie, I don't know, maybe I'll, next week we'll, when you're back, we'll talk about it, but maybe with Russell, we could go back, and I don't know, I can't find it, but if I went back into the newspapers, if you went back to the early 70s, when it was a monetary-driven phenomenon, the first thing that happened was, in oil prices, by the Arab oil embargo, and even then, Milton Friedman was saying it's not, there were people that wanted to bomb those guys. It was brutal. I mean, we collectively hated Arabs like you never saw in 1973, and they caused my gas price to go
up. Wrestlers ever was the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, they caused.
You know who our enemies are.
I'm paying a dollar a barrel because of some guy running around in a headdress and or whatever the things are, it was almost like Pearl Harbor, for God's sake. It was almost that bad, wasn't it, Russell?
Oh, it was. It really, I mean, there. But
it was scary.
Everybody got collectively angry because that's who the oil.
Yeah, those were the guys.
That's what the oil shortage was. Isn't their fault.
It was some big fat guy in a white robe.
And they point the finger at them.
Yeah, some big fat guy in a white robe with 10 wives, and he's screwing my gas prices, basically, right?
Yeah.
S&P futures.
That's not the source of this one.
No, S&P futures down 24, and S&P futures down 114. Back on Friday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.